Your palms begin to sweat and your heart begins pounding. The legs begin to buckle under and butterflies take flight in your stomach. These are the most common symptoms in people who have fears that range from being in open places to being intimate. Welcome to Frankly Speaking. I'm Michelle Lassay Montgomery for George Mason University, the state university in Northern Virginia. Today's show will discuss phobias, why people have them and how they can be helped. With me to discuss this subject is Jonathan Crook, director of the Phobia Treatment Center in Alexandria. Welcome to Frankly Speaking, Jonathan.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Jonathan, is there a difference between phobia and fear?
Yes. The difference between phobia and fear is that a phobia is irrational, whereas a fear might be very real. And I think that's probably the easiest way to define a phobia, is that it is an irrational fear.
How many phobias are there?
Countless. A person can become phobic about virtually anything. And what we find is that it has to do with the central element of a phobia, which is the panic attack. And what happens is that a person will associate this very powerful, uncomfortable feeling, the symptoms of which you mentioned at the beginning, and when they associate this feeling with a certain place or situation or object or person, then they can become phobic about that place, object, or situation.
Can a person be phobic about another person?
It's possible. It's not as common as phobias of situations, but it can happen.
What are some of the most common phobias?
Well, the most common phobias are fear of flying, fear of heights, fear of driving, fears of public speaking. And another very common phobia is agoraphobia. Agoraphobia is a fear of the fear, a fear of having a panic attack. A person will have a panic attack and they're so terrified by this feeling that they become afraid that it's going to happen again, and that worry about it happening again actually stresses them to the point where it makes it much more likely that it will happen again. And so these people can become very debilitated by this fear of the fear, and in some cases they can even become housebound, although most people with agoraphobia do not become housebound.
What are the least common phobias?
Well, there are lots of uncommon phobias. I think that it gets back to the idea that it's really where a person will associate having the panic attack with, and so they can really associate that with anything.
You mentioned panic attack. What's the difference between having a panic attack and actually being apprehensive about a situation?
A panic attack is where a person feels overwhelmed by powerful symptoms of fear and anxiety. Their heart will race, they'll feel tight in the chest, they'll feel shaky and sweaty, they'll feel dizzy. Sometimes they'll have an unreal feeling, or even a feeling like they're not even in their own body. And this is a very terrifying, very overwhelming feeling, which can lead a person to lose the ability to plan, think, or reason. Now, they don't lose control, although that's what their fantasy is. They don't know that that's the worst thing that happens with a panic attack. So they fantasize, or imagine, if you would, that something worse could happen, or they haven't felt the worst kind of panic that there is. And when they start to worry about that, it leads to the anticipatory anxiety that you were alluding to. This anticipation that things could get worse in the future. And that tends to be on a lower level, although the two can feed off of one another. You can have this anticipation that you'll feel panicky, and then when you do, you think, aha, I was right to worry about that because it did happen. And then you'll anticipate it some more. And this is what happens with people who have agoraphobia. They get stuck in this kind of catch-22 of anticipatory anxiety leading to panic attacks.
What percentage of the population is affected?
Well, the statistics for agoraphobia vary between 1% of the population to as much as 11% of the population. In fact, a recent report put it at 11% of the population, and is actually now seen as being more common than depression, which was recent up until very recently thought to be the most common type of mental health problem that there was.
Now, agoraphobia has been associated with women. Does it affect men? Does it affect children? Or
agoraphobia can happen to men, and it can happen in a certain way with children. It tends to show up as school phobias with children. And it does certainly happen with men. At our particular center, we see about a 60-40 split. 60% of the women that we 60% of the people that we treat for agoraphobia are women, 40% are men. That's a little bit different than what other centers report. It's a little bit more evenly balanced than what other centers report.
Are there certain personality types that succumb to chronic phobias?
There is no such thing as a phobic personality. There are several traits that we tend to see with people who have phobias. They tend to be perfectionistic, they tend to have very vivid imaginations, and they tend to be somewhat more intelligent than most people.
How do phobias become phobias?
Well, it's that process of association that I talked about earlier, where a person will associate a situation with this feeling of fear and panic. And once that association is made, it leads to this anticipation. They start to think in the future about this situation, wondering what's going to happen the next time they get into that situation, if this feeling will be there, if this feeling will cause them to lose control in some way. For example, to have a heart attack, if this feeling will lead them to pass out, or if this feeling will lead them to lose control and go crazy or embarrass themselves in some way.
How can a phobia be treated?
Well, phobia treatment, as we use it at the Phobia Treatment Center in Alexandria, is a number of different treatment approaches that are custom tailored to each individual, because phobias vary from person to person in terms of how much of the person's phobic response in a situation has to do with their physiology and how much of their phobic response in a situation has to do with their own personal psychology. A lot of what happens with a person who has a phobia is centered around this feeling of panic. When they have this feeling of panic, which comes on for no apparent reason, and they're terrified by it, of course they want to figure out what it is that makes this feeling be there, and they want to do anything that they can to avoid feeling this very powerful, very uncomfortable feeling. And so it develops a sort of present-oriented psychology to it. A person will become hypervigilant when they have panic attacks. They'll be always on the lookout for any little clue or anything at all that might give them an indication that this panicky feeling might be coming on. And if they get that clue, they might avoid the situation before they ever feel panicky, because they have the sense that this panicky feeling could cause them to lose control in some way. So usually with people who have phobias, a very straightforward, present-oriented kind of behavioral approach is useful. With some individuals, medication is useful. And I'm not talking about tranquilizers so much. They tend to be not so helpful, although in some cases they can have some usefulness, although it's very limited. There are some people who, in fact, can utilize a more family treatment-oriented approach. They're, for some reason, trapped in their lives in some way. They feel trapped in a job, or they feel trapped in a marriage, or there's something about their life which leaves them feeling stuck. And sometimes that kind of stuck feeling needs a more insight-oriented type of approach. So we have to be very flexible, and we try to be as flexible as possible at the Phobia Center to meet each person who comes to us for the treatment of their phobia where they're at and provide them with the treatment that is most suitable for them.
Now, the situations that you just described, can they be tracked to a phobia, to a particular kind of phobia, the trapped feeling that you mentioned?
The feeling of being trapped is not uncommon with a person who has a phobia. In some regards, the panic attack can be seen as the ultimate expression of the fight or flight mechanism, which virtually every human being has. It's a somewhat anachronistic defense mechanism left over from our great-great-great forefathers, and yet it can still go awry, and that's essentially what happens with a panic attack. And when it goes awry, the person's psychology is that they want to fight or flee. And if they're in a situation where they feel like they can't do either one, then it tends to make that feeling much more profound. In many cases, this panic attack is physiologically based, and there are certain kinds of health problems which can predispose a person to having a panic attack. And I'll give you just a few examples. In women, and this may be part of the reason why women seem to be more susceptible to panic attacks. In women, we've seen it happen when they become pregnant or immediately after a pregnancy has come to term. They seem to be more susceptible at those times. It can happen after a major illness. It can happen if the person's depressed. It can happen if there are certain benign and not dangerous heart conditions. It seems to be linked somewhat to the person's blood sugar level and has been associated in the past with hypoglycemia, although the final results aren't in on that. So there's a number of physiological conditions which can predispose a person to having a panic attack. And if those are accurately treated, then the person's likeliness of having a panic subsides.
We're becoming a more high-tech oriented society, and stress and anxiety seems to play a part in producing phobias and fears. What lies ahead for the future?
Well, it's a very interesting question, because many of the phobias seem to revolve around high-tech situations, for example, flying or elevators or driving. Driving on the beltway seems to be worse than driving around city streets. So there's a lot of phobic situations, if you would, in our modern society, and it seems to have a lot to do with a person having anxiety and stress put upon them that they are not dealing with well at the time that they have their first panic. And then their nervous system becomes sensitized, and when there's a lot of movement or they're in a very unusual kind of situation, the sensitized nervous system has a tendency to just misfire and cause that panicky feeling. And when that happens, they of course are more likely to develop a phobia, and as we have more and more of those situations which are very unusual and not natural, if you would, for our antiquated nervous system, then phobias seem to be more and more likely.
If there's one thing that you'd want to tell listeners about how to avoid falling into this kind of entrapment, what would you say? What would that be?
Well, in terms of avoiding having a phobia, I think the most important thing is to know what it is. Just become educated about it. If you become educated about it, or educated about how to deal with your stress, those are prophylactic measures for phobias.
Thank you, Jonathan, for being on Frankly Speaking. My guest has been Jonathan Crook, director of the Phobia Treatment Center in Alexandria, Virginia, and we've been talking about phobias. For more information about this program, please call 323-2138. Stay tuned next week when Frankly Speaking commemorates the 100th anniversary of music composer Richard Wagner. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. My engineer today has been Warren Yeager. I'm Michelle Lassay Montgomery for George Mason University, the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.